Fades off, comes back, quick shot. Scores!
Scores!
David Perron! It's a tie game! David Perron has tied it up!
David, empty net for the Flyers. Extra attacker out. And Oshie with a chance to put it away. We'll do just that.
With the empty net, Nick Foligno missed the net. The Cam, the Perry out in front, and they score. A tip in for Foligno. And the Blackhawks are up 4-2 with 1:27 remaining.
And look out, it's out of the box. It's Mason McTavish on a breakaway. He scores! Mason McTavish rips the Penguins' hearts out late. A shorthanded goal with 11.9 seconds to go. Alexiev flips across ice, they score! Sonny Milano, and the Capitals are just pouring it on.
What happened?
Why?
This upcoming penalty on Arizona, thanks to a shorthanded two-on-one with Rustin Achari. They didn't score. Oh my goodness, they just did on themselves! Unbelievable.
They just did on themselves. Josh Getzoff from Sportsnet Pittsburgh there, I believe, and lots of other calls. They scored on themselves more than once this year, but never quite in that fashion. Listen, when we're wrapping this thing up and we're doing the autopsy on the Penguins season, and one of the questions that came up, and I thought it was a legitimate one, is which is worse, scoring in your own net on a delayed penalty or in a tie game having a 5-on-3 for almost 2 minutes with 2 minutes left in the game and having the other team score? I don't think I've ever seen either one of them. In fact, I know I haven't. What? I haven't seen either one of those things happen. It's like asking of last year's or 2 years ago Pirates, which is worse, Will Craig starting a rundown between home and first or Key Brian Hayes breaking out a dinner buffet while the play's going on him at third base? I mean, this was incredible. Yeah, please don't let, even though it was fun, don't let the season end, the little season-ending run, obscure the fact that the Penguins got everything they deserved
and Joe,
this
that's,
season.
That's
they
my,
did.
That's my biggest fear, Joe. More than anything else, my biggest fear is this false sense of, hey, yippee-hooray, we're close. We're close to being a contender again. I've even heard some people say, oh, everybody in the playoffs was afraid to play. If the Penguins got in, oh boy, they knew. And then, you know, the granddaddy of them all, look at what the Florida Panthers did. We're close. All we had to do is get in the tournament. No, it's not working. It's been broken now for at least 3 seasons. It's not working anymore. The fact that you continue to basically look around the two big elephants in the room, the fact that you still have to build your team around the big stars who, because of their contracts, it is what it is, even though they're old, aging, and guess what? You got 80 games from both Malkin and Crosby last year. You got 80 games from both, or 80, what is it, 81 or 82 games from both of them this year. You got 81 or 82 games from Letang and Carlson this year. And guess what? It hasn't mattered. So it's not working. The other big elephant in the room is the goalie you just signed for a 5-year deal for reasonably good money, who nobody in their right mind thought was your franchise goalie. So now you got to deal with that. And then the third elephant in the room is Mike Sullivan, which in that sport, I can't understand, Joe, how he has still maintained his job given his lack of playoff success. And actually, I wrote a column for the Post-Gazette about the Penguins today, right? And one of the lines, as I said, was the good news for Mike Sullivan is he's taken the bad playoff loss out of the equation by just missing the playoffs every year, because that's what he's doing. You know, I mean, you remember the up 3-1 against the Rangers and blowing it. You remember the we're in the Montreal Canadiens in the bubble We played, you know, well, they're the 27th seed or whatever the hell they were. You remember that? Getting swept by the Islanders? Remember that? Well, we don't have to worry about those, you know, heartbreaking type playoff losses anymore because they just don't make the playoffs. It's not working. And it's been broken now for 3 years. So if it's going to be another year of just rearranging the deck, you know, the deck chairs on the Titanic, and we come back basically with the same band all together and the same, why don't we just fast forward to next year at this time when you and I, Lord willing, the crick don't rise and everything else, are sitting here and we can just rip them for missing the playoffs again or just barely scraping in and getting in.
It's been very Steeler-like, and the best case against Mike Sullivan is, well, just what you laid out, but even more specifically, the very things that they were bad at last season, they've gotten worse at.
Right.
The power play, overtime. They're a horrendous defensive team, but let's just talk about the power play. They were bad last year, and they got significantly worse. How is that not a reflection of the coach? Or if you want to say, hey, it's more about the players, it's still under the coach's, you know, purvey or purveyance, however I say that, city limits. His mission is to figure out the problems and fix them. When he arrived here, the state of the Penguins reminds me very much of when Mike Sullivan arrived. The Stars, some of them at least, were slumping. They were in the doldrums. The team was underachieving. Nothing much was happening. There was sort of gloom and doom over everything. And Sully changed that, to his credit. But that was a long time ago.
Yes.
A long time ago. Now I look around the league, I see, you know, teams energized by coaching changes. It's okay. It's like the Tomlin thing. You know, we all know Tomlin's a good coach. We all know Sullivan's a good coach. Is he the right coach here? I saw the Islanders energized by a coaching change. Capitals made the playoffs. The Bruins made a coaching change last year. They have like 800 points since then. Vancouver with Rick Tocchet. Edmonton made a change early in the season and just took off from there.
The Kings.
It's like, come on. You know, it's if you want to argue, listen, we'll change the people around them, I'll listen to that. But the idea that Kyle Dubas put forth earlier this year was, how dare we even talk about Mike Sullivan?
That's not even a discussion. Right. Well, why isn't it a discussion?
That's what
I would like to know. Why isn't it a discussion? If you take his first 3 years, okay, 15, 16, 17. All right, he won a cup. Then he won another cup. Then he lost to the eventual cup champion and was a great series. But since those three seasons, the Penguins have been a lot more mediocre than anything else. And he's been in charge since then.
It's really Steeler-like. The parallels are almost eerie. You know, aging core in some respects. I know the Steelers, both teams have infiltrated with some good young players, but you get it. And they're living in the mushy middle constantly, never sinking toward the bottom, which is what the Steelers needed to do to get Ben, which is what the Penguins needed to do, go all the way to rock bottom to get Mario, get Sid, Gino,
right.
Lurie, Stahl, all of that. It can be fun. It was fun for the last month. But it's no way, I don't think, to get back in the business of winning championships. So your thoughts out there on the future of Mike Sullivan. Paul suggested earlier, and I agree, that you approach Gino and Letang. Gino first, I would say. And you ask him, at least try to determine, would you play for another team if we could deal you? Would you? I think Gino's reached the point. He was really good for the last, you know, 3-4 weeks of the season. He is more. He's more of a losing player than a winning player.
Yes.
Honestly, I hate to say it that way, and I've been a huge defender of the guy. But it's just he. It used to be you'd live with the Geno stuff, you know, the turnovers, all of that, the penalties, crazy stuff, because he more than made up for it with heavy production and his offensive genius. And when that wanes and the other stuff doesn't, then the balance starts to go the other way,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think unlike Sidney Crosby, who is, you know, what we call the 200-foot player, who's still very effective at everything he does. And Malkin has sort of just become a kind of a one-trick pony kind of guy, right?
And he doesn't get it done on the power
play
at all.
Yeah, he doesn't. And if he's not scoring, like Sidney Crosby can go five games and not score, and there's so many things he's doing to help you win games.
Well, let me ask you this, and you can weigh in on this. 412-928-9370. We all watched it go down last night. It was horrifying. It was enthralling for a little while. Watching both games on the split screen on NHL Network, and then it all went to pieces when they didn't call icing, or they did call icing when they shouldn't have, on the Canadiens because a couple Red Wings defensemen, you know, were lazy getting back and easily could have touched that puck before it went for icing. That was annoying, but you know what? It didn't matter in the end. Neither did Tortorella pulling his goalie. You can't blame him for that. He said he didn't know that the other game was over. Listen. The Penguins put themselves in a situation to fall victim to all of that kind of crap. 928-9370 fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Social media's Biggest Loser Malzi, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Reserve your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com. And the text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. All right, Paul, quick answers here. Matt Bensel has a bunch of questions about the Penguins' offseason. He starts with this. Will Mike Sullivan be back? Not should he, will he? I say yes, but I think both his assistants, Sully, will be told to make changes there. Reardon and Vellucci, do you agree?
Well, I mean, I think there will be some changes to the coaching staff, yes. But I think there's zero chance Mike Sullivan isn't back. I guess I should say 0.5%.
I agree.
There's anything can happen, but for the most part, I don't see almost any scenario where he's back.
Todd Reardon.
I mean, I'm sorry that he's not back.
Right. Todd Reardon is a really good hockey coach and a good man, but you're accountable to your job description, and his is very simply, in addition to working with defensemen, get the power play better. I disagree with Wenzel here. The failure of that unit this season could prompt the Penguins to make a change. I guess I agree to a point, but you have to mention last season they were mediocre and underachieving on the power play, and it got exponentially worse. Like, how is that? It's something. There has to be accountability. I'm sorry. Number two, does Crosby get extended? Tom Werner, the Fenway Sports Group chairman, said yes, of course, in the fall. Crosby's on the record saying yes. He also seems to be okay with a soft rebuild. You know, I'm reading kind of into Rob Rossi's recent story on all of that. He doesn't need to go anywhere to win. He's done his winning. He's got three cups. I think he does get extended, Paul. Do you?
Crosby?
Yeah, this offseason.
I don't think there's any chance that doesn't happen. Again, I think he definitely gets an extension this offseason, just like I think Sullivan is definitely back.
Here's a big one. Number three, will we see a Guentzel reunion? Guentzel's been unbelievable since he went to Carolina. Like, he has the most points this much time after a trade deadline than anybody who's ever been traded at the deadline. At least that was true like a week ago. But I told you right when it happened that he wasn't signing back with Carolina. There was talk of, oh, right away, we'll get him to it. Like, this was a trade and sign. No way. They throw big time contracts around in Carolina like manhole covers. He ain't getting $10 million a year if that's what he's looking for from Carolina. So I say that the Penguins are going to clear cap space and make a run at Guentzel this offseason. I think there's about a 40 to 50% chance that could happen. You? And I'd be in favor of it.
I don't think so. I think it's going to cost too much money. I just do. I think it's going to be, and especially the way he's playing, he's now a free agent. He's now gotten out of Pittsburgh. He's going to try and get the biggest contract he can get. And I think someone's going to pay him. handsomely?
That'll be the question.
And I think if you're, you know, your problem is, you, again, you can't make moves like that when you have, you know, and I know people say, oh, well, their contracts aren't that bad, at, you know, whatever it is, $5 million or $6 million, but that's a lot of money that you have compiled in three guys in Carlson, Letang, and Malkin. And
they just add up, man.
I just don't know that you can win with those guys anymore.
Our friend Nelly, who watches the Devils every day, told me before the season that Ryan Graves was not good. Okay, I don't know that Nelly has access to the kind of analytics that Kyle Dubas does, but when I have a fan telling me you're going to be very disappointed in Ryan Graves, and then you watch what happened, and Dubas allotted all those millions for this guy, what a disaster. You know, and it's like, it's like, well, and I've said it too, he made some good moves, he made some bad moves. No. You don't just get away with that move. That is a franchise hampering move when we commit tens of millions to Ryan Graves. you don't just get to write that off by saying, well, yeah, but Nedeljkovic was a good signing. No. Sorry.
No.
That was horrendous. A horrendous miscalculation on Dubas's part. And so was Jari, by the way.
Exactly. That was basically those two were the ones that I think you look at that, you look at those two and you say to yourself, you know, Dubas apparently is a really good general manager and he's smart and he knows what he's doing. But he also, in his first year, I would say, you know, it seemed like people wanted to give him an A last summer.
Yeah.
But as the season's gone, because they got Carlson, it was like, oh, it's an A+.
It seemed good.
But as the season has gone on, I would say Dubas has probably earned like a C. Like, there's a few moves he made.
When you're hampering your team with 10 plus million worth of Jari and Ryan Graves.
Right.
I mean, that's almost unforgivable. And now he's got to get out of that. He somehow has to get out of that. And it's not going to be easy to do. That's disastrous. Paul, can you throw those reeds over here, please? Thank you, sir. It's time for What's Cooking, brought to you. And then he throws it, and they split in the middle of the air. This is an outrage limit.
Big time throw.
I thought he was a quarterback at some point. Was he not? What's Cooking, brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet Springs here. So are the deals at Sun Chevrolet, sunchevy.com. High 77 today with cloudy skies, low of 59. Before we get to Tex in the City, very quickly, we just had a major story break in the last hour from the NBA. Michael Porter's brother, Michael Porter, of course, plays for the champion Denver Nuggets. His brother, Jonte, for the Raptors, has been issued a lifetime ban.
How dumb is this guy?
A lifetime ban, and he committed the cardinal sin, which is he bet, this is according to Adrian Wojo, I don't know how to say his last name. He bet on the Raptors to lose, apparently, Paul.
Yeah.
That's taking it above and beyond here. We're going back to like the Chicago, were they the White Sox then or the Black Sox? I can't remember, of 1919, allegedly throwing the World Series. I mean, this dude, if this is all true, what's he doing?
He also was apparently betting on NBA games when he was in the G League.
A lifetime ban.
The league investigation revealed he placed at least 13 bets on NBA games using an associate's online betting account.
Was Otani's interpreter his partner in this?
Yes, the bets, they ranged from $15 to $22,000.
Unbelievable. All right, Tex in the City.
Here you go. Here's even better, Joe. Mm. So this dude basically just threw away his entire career because he's done.
Yeah.
Done.
That's it. And I think that that will reverberate through sports.
His net winnings, 21,000.
That ain't going to do it. His brother Michael makes that in pregame warmups. Go ahead. Give us one text.
Well, this is big from a texter because this is breaking news that we missed. Marc-Andre Fleury has signed a one-year contract back with the Minnesota Wild.
Holy horse milk. Well, that'll end speculation that he's coming back to the Penguins.
Just broke an hour ago.
All right, give us one text. We have 30 seconds.
The other text that kind of made me chuckle, there were two of them. Jason and Slippery Rock said that the segments went over so many times today, they went over more than Jokic's point total in the NBA. And Matt said, could you imagine A.J. Burnett on a pitch count? He'd tell Shelty to go sit the you-know-what down with that shirt that he had.
There's a 10.
When he came to get him.
Yes.
That's the 10. That's a 10. We'll be talking more about that tomorrow. Good night, Paul. Good night, City Limits.
Good night.
Good night.